Iranians hold rallies across the country to denounce the latest riots that have erupted in a number of cities over the past week. Israeli forces launch a raid in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus, killing one Palestinian and wounding several others. North Korea fires a ballistic missile ahead of the U.S. Vice President's visit to the region and joint military drills by Seoul and Washington. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Iranians are out on the streets across the nation to denounce the latest riots that erupted in a number of cities over the past week. Crowds of protesters are rallying to denounce the desecration of sanctities and acts of vandalism during the riots. The rioters have blocked the streets, vandalizing public property and police vehicles, setting fire to dozens of ambulances. That followed the death of the 22-year-old woman earlier this month after she was taken into a police station. Tehran Police Commander Hossein Rahimi has rejected claims that Mahsa Amini was physically assaulted. Officials say that she died of medical conditions.
Mahsa Amini, a name that has hit the headlines over the past days for her death in hospital after her detention by the Iranian police over her non-compliance with the Islamic dress code. While demonstrations have been held across the country demanding clarification regarding her death, there have been violent protests and riots leading to clashes with police and acts of vandalism against public property.
It's not about hijab in Iran. What is important is Islam, that Western countries want to get our hijab, our Islam from us.
Those who are rioting are in fact mercenaries who are paid by Iran's enemies. I advise all my fellow Iranians to be wise and cautious and stay away from the seditions plotted by our enemies.
Iranian officials say the death of Mahsa Amini is being exploited by foreign-backed organized groups to instigate chaos and wreak havoc across the country. On Friday, upon returning from New York, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said people's demand will be definitely heard. However, he noted that jeopardizing public security will not be tolerated. 22-year-old Mahsa was an Iranian Kurd from the city of Sakdez in Kurdistan province. On September 13th, she was on a trip to Tehran with her family when she was arrested by police. CCTV footage released by police showed that she passed out at the police station. 3 days later, she died in hospital.
While police have dismissed allegations that Mahsa was mistreated during detention, Iranian authorities have given assurance a thorough investigation into her death is underway. Now, many Iranians say they're all grieved for Mahsa's unfortunate death, yet they say the issue should not divide Iranians and harm national security. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Political analyst Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi earlier told us how the initial protests were hijacked by Western media to present a distorted image of Iran.
Not all those who were protesting, not all those who were against what took place had the same stand and same idea. A category of them were those who were always looking after regime change in Iran. Several of them are, you know, those directly or indirectly related to the Westerns. But put that aside, there was another category of people who were not looking after regime change, but they were against this hijab law and regulations in Iran. So they started to protest. And there were a third category of those who were protesting. They were not against hijab itself. They were against this particular attitude of implementation of law, and they were looking after a better way of implementation of the hijab rule and law in Iran. So beside them, the fourth category of those who were in support of the system, whom you are, observing currently in streets of different cities of Iran today, that they are showing that they are against what took place. But unfortunately, when the Western media, when the mainstream media was coming and trying to portray the image of Iran, they were just showing those who were basically looking after regime change. And let's not forget, being realistic on ground when you are, you know, provoking people to come to the streets, show their anger, there is often violence. I don't want to call all those protesting to be agents of this. No, this is not the case. So why Iran is being highlighted so? Why anything inside Iran that could have taken place is becoming too violent inside at the streets of Iran? We cannot, of course, it has been repeated again and again. You can't ignore the foreign factors here.
Iran's foreign minister says that Americans have sent messages recently indicating preparedness to clinch a deal in the Vienna talks. Hossein Amir Abdullahian is currently in New York to hold meetings on the fringes of the UN General Assembly's annual session. He said Iran has responded by telling the American side that only on the back of a realistic approach and goodwill would it be possible to strike an agreement. He said Iran is ready for a lasting agreement on the revival of the 2015 deal. That's Washington that needs to make a decision that would lead to a strong and durable agreement. Back in 2018, the U.S. withdrew from the multilateral pact, throwing its fate into question. Iran responds to scale back some of its nuclear commitments. Several rounds of talks were then held in Vienna as part of efforts to revive the accord. Tehran is criticizing Washington for making exceptions to its communication sanctions when it comes to undermining Iran's security and stability. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says, by loosening a number of communication sanctions while keeping a maximum pressure campaign in place, the United States is only trying to provoke instability in Iran. Kanani called those tactics hypocritical and nefarious designs meant to violate Iran's national sovereignty and said that they will not go unanswered. The U.S. Treasury has issued a license to loosen internet sanctions on Iran, allegedly to support a free flow of information to Iranian people. But the government says it's restricted access to internet in some areas to deal with violent riots and vandalism. Tensions continue to simmer in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, where regime forces killed another Palestinian hours ago. Three Palestinians were also injured during clashes that took place after Israeli forces stormed the city of Nablus early this morning. Tel Aviv frequently launches raids to intimidate and arrest Palestinians. Reacting to the incursion, Hamas has held Palestinian resistance. It says the clashes show the Palestinians' power and their readiness to enter into a conflict to defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Israeli forces have killed some 100 Palestinians in the West Bank this year alone, making it the deadliest year since 2015. On Saturday, they killed a Palestinian, claiming that he attempted a ramming attack. That's an allegation that Palestinians deny. Just hours ago, North Korea launched a single ballistic missile toward the sea off its east coast ahead of a visit to the neighboring south by a top American official. South Korea says that the short-range ballistic missile flew around 600 kilometers before landing in the sea. Seoul called the launch an unjustifiable act of provocation and said its military is in full readiness to respond to any threat. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is planned to visit Seoul next week. Also starting Monday, South Korean American forces will be holding massive four-day military drills. Nuclear-powered aircraft carrier U.S.'s Ronald Reagan has already arrived in South Korea in preparation for the war games. The South and the U.S. routinely conduct drills in the area. Pyongyang regards them as a rehearsal for invasion. Our correspondent Jennifer Chang tells us why the number of missile launches by North Korea has picked up pace recently.
This was the first test by North Korea of a ballistic missile in nearly 4 months. So this was serious indeed. On June 5th, North Korea fired 8 short-range ballistic missiles all in one day, and it has conducted an unprecedented number of missile tests, including 17 ballistic missile tests and 2 cruise missile tests this year. This is largely due to the breakdown of talks between the U.S. and North Korea about the denuclearization issue, of North Korea. There was a disagreement between the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump at their historic summits. The last one in 2019, especially after that, there were no further real discussions of denuclearization between the two nations.
Now let's take a look at Italy. People there are casting their ballots in the early elections for the lower house and Senate. The elections are forecast to return Italy's most right-wing government since the Second World War and usher in its first woman prime minister. A right-wing alliance led by Giorgio Meloni's Brothers of Italy party appeared on course for a clear victory when the last opinion polls were published 2 weeks ago. But there has been speculation that support for the left-leaning five-star movement has also picked up in recent days, and that could jeopardize the rightist alliance's chance of winning a majority in the Senate. But whatever the result, Meloni would be the obvious candidate for a premier as leader of the right-wing alliance. The early elections were triggered by party infighting that brought down Prime Minister Mario Draghi's National Unity government in July. Okay, for more information and insight, let's go to Rome. Our correspondent Max Civili is there. Max, good to have you with us. So tell us about the voting, what's the turnout going to be like, and also the reasons why this right-wing government and first one prime minister has taken office.
Good day. There is Italians have been going to the polls since 7 this morning, 9:30 a.m. Tehran time. And the election is taking place amid a biting energy crisis, questions about Italy's future stance towards the European Union, and widespread disenchantment, I'd say even disillusionment about politics. 51 million people are eligible to vote, but according to pollster, the turnout could be low. And there's a huge loss of trust in politicians. The statistics speak for themselves. The next government will be the fourth cabinet in less than 5 years, the 68th executive in 74 years of Republican history. Italy averages almost one government a year since 1948. The number of lawmakers has been slashed. They're going to be 600 parliamentarians instead of the current 945. This is an attempt to save on public spending, but the electoral law in place to vote and to form the next government is a jumble of articles conflicting with one another. Just to give an example of why disaffection is running high among Italians, according to the law, citizens cannot pick their favorite candidates when they vote. They can only vote for blocked lists on the ballot, and it's the parties themselves who decide who wins the votes on the list. You mentioned that the five-star movement before. Consider that the previous legislatures began with the anti-establishment five-star movement leading an anti-system government and ended with the former Goldman Sachs managing director Mario Draghi being the prime minister of a broad-based coalition. According to final polls, a right-wing coalition is on course to win a comfortable majority of seats. It's Brothers of Italy, the party who's likely to win about 25% of the vote. The leader is 45-year-old Giorgia Meloni, could be Italy's first prime minister, female prime minister. The coalition is divided, is quite united, but it's divided on Italy's approach to Russia, while Berlusconi and Salvini have favorable views on Putin. Meloni has staunchly supported sanctions against Moscow. Exit polls are expected later in the day. The official results will not be announced until early tomorrow morning.
Okay. Thanks for that. From Rome, that was Max Civili, our correspondent there. Now, the Russian foreign minister is accusing the West of developing what he calls a grotesque Russophobia and trying to fracture his country.
The official Russophobia in the West has reached an unprecedented, grotesque scale. They are not shying away from declaring their intent to inflict military defeat upon our country, but also to destroy and fracture Russia.
Addressing the UN General Assembly, Lavrov said that the U.S. is trying to turn the entire world into its backyard and is throwing a fit on referendums that are being held in several Ukrainian regions. The Luhansk and Donetsk self-proclaimed republics in the east and the Russian-controlled parts of Kherson and Zaporizhia are holding the referendums on joining Russia. Moscow says it's up to the residents of the four regions to decide if they want to be part of Russia. The West, however, has strongly criticized the referendums, calling them a sham.
Referendums have begun in the Ukrainian regions of Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson. The voting is set to run for 5 days, until September 27. These referendums have been blasted by the West.
The very international order that we have gathered here to uphold is being shredded before our eyes. We cannot, we will not, allow President Putin to get away with it.
As members of the Security Council, we must unequivocally reject Russia's attempts to annex Ukrainian territory.
But in contrast to how the media has called it illegal, there are many who are in favor of it. Given this support, then how can the referendums be deemed illegal or a sham? Memories are short as to when this war actually started and how many people have been killed. One figure put the number of people killed to at least 13,000. Another puts it at 10,000. Keeping in mind, these are the number of deaths before the war, which began in the year 2014. Russia had tried since 2014 to reach a diplomatic solution with the West over this conflict. It was called the Minsk Agreement. Why the Minsk Agreement failed depends on who you speak to. The former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych accused Kiev and its U.S. patrons responsible for the poor implementation of the peace agreement. Yet at the heart of the conflict lies NATO's eastward expansion. The Kremlin claims that the West broke a promise that it made in the 1990s not to expand NATO after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Putin said NATO had promised not to expand an inch to the east, promises made to the former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev during negotiations between the West and the Soviet Union over German unification. Back in 1998, NATO was confined to Western Europe, yet today it is at Russia's gate. This shows Putin's accusation of NATO's eastward expansion to hold true. Putin therefore set Ukraine as his red line, hence Crimea, and now the referendums that are taking place in these four regions will set up a wall to stop NATO's eastward expansion. Not surprisingly, the outcome of the referendums are predicted to be in Russia's favor.
And with that, we come to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran.
We here at Arab English Radio express our heartfelt condolences to all our Muslim listeners on the occasion of 28th of Safar, the anniversary of the divine ascension of the Holy Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today is also the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace be upon him, the second infallible successor to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Our heartfelt condolences to all our Muslim listeners on this day of double grief.
torture.
Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part, we looked into the adverse effects and potential dangers of psychotropic drugs. We went to France, the number one user of such medication, to see how psychotropic drugs prescribed much too readily and in a cocktail to cure feelings of anxiety and depression have in some cases led to madness, suicide, extreme acts of violence, and murder. Yet the root cause of the extensive use of such drugs seems to be much more than naive and ignorant doctors and desperate patients, especially when a multi-million dollar industry is at stake. Stay with us for the rest of the documentary.
In the Congress room, many conferences take place one after another, but nobody is dealing with the dangers of antidepressants. One of them is led by Anthony Rothschild, a psychiatrist well known for his successful books on psychotropic drugs. The great specialist is holding a debate on the adaptation of treatments depending on the illness. But not once does he say that antidepressants should not be prescribed. Our question is straightforward.
It seems that there is a lot of danger with antidepressants. What do you think about this? Like suicide or, murders?
No. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about, but I just told you there's no reliable scientific evidence that antidepressants cause people to commit murder or any other crime or suicide.
So how come that on boxes?
All right, this is not serious, okay?
Is this a surprising reaction? Anthony Rothschild also has conflicts of interest with an impressive number of pharmaceutical companies.
So I told you what I thought. You're going to keep asking me the same question.
Okay.
Well, you got my quote, all right?
Okay, very good.
How can such things still be said in this day and age when on all the stands promoting psychotropic medication, whole boards are covered by signs warning of side effects? Among the several side effects, the risk of suicide or violent behavior is prioritized by all. These warnings are a legal obligation enforced by medical organizations. But how much are these warnings worth next to the publicity hype from the pharmaceutical companies?
When you're depressed, where do you want to go? Nowhere. Who do you feel like seeing? No one. Depression hurts in so many ways.
These ads banned in France reach tens of millions of households in the United States, one of the rare countries where the promotion of medication is allowed. For the promoters of these ads, a new customer is a captive customer. This is what Michael Baum denounces, a lawyer specializing in the pharmaceutical industry. This man is a nightmare for the laboratories. His trials have cost them billions of dollars. His theme, denouncing the addictive effects of medication.
One of the issues with these drugs is once you're on, you can't get off. They become a captive audience. And they get trained, basically, the patients get trained to stay on it. It's if they take the drug and then stop the drug, they start experiencing these brain zaps, or they start experiencing these nausea symptoms or these severe headaches or dizziness. And then they take the drug. They go back on it, and it goes away. Well, they get reinforced with the concept of, I need to stay on it. And they think that maybe, and what doctors used to think, was that they were relapsing back into their depression. That wasn't what was happening at all.
The dangers of psychotropic drugs have been well known for a long time. Since September 1991, the American Medication Agency has had to react against waves of complaints against Prozac, the grandfather of modern antidepressants. This drug has been blamed for hundreds of suicides and murders, and administration officials are getting together to determine whether a correlation exists between Prozac and acts of violence. In front of this committee of reputed psychiatrists are the families of victims.
My husband didn't believe me. He was a pharmacist. We came back, and on April 30, he just blew his brains out in front of all of us. How many more have to die before somebody looks? If we made a mistake, we're humans.
After being on Prozac for 21 days, my wife shot and killed both of these two boys right here. She turned the gun to herself and shot herself twice. I heard these people talking about scientific data. For those that don't say, we have scientific data.
I entered
therapy 1 year ago as a victim of rape. I stand before you today a victim of Prozac. It baffles my mind to think that a prescription drug I could simply compare to a felony of rape. But yes, they can be compared, because if a drug robs you of your will to live, then it has committed a felony equal to that of rape.
She shot herself on the head.
This was the date of my first...
For a whole day, witnesses will make statements. It's overwhelming.
I firmly believe the drug...
The internist...
How many more people are going to be killed and maimed before you do something? You have the power to change things. You have the power to listen to what we say and investigate what we say. We need help.
Following the statements, the committee votes.
There is credible evidence to support a conclusion that antidepressant drugs cause the emergence and or intensification of suicidality and or other violent behaviors. Those in favor of that statement vote yes. Those opposed to that statement, no.
There is total surprise. Unanimously, the committee declares that there is no link between Prozac and the violence described by the families of the victims.
Vote on the following statement.
Jeffrey Lieberman is a member of the committee. Later, he goes on to be the all-powerful president of the American Psychiatric Association. And of the 10 psychiatrists present during the vote, 9 of them had conflicts of interest with one or several pharmaceutical companies. When Prozac was launched, the Lilly Pharmaceutical Company worked very hard. But one of the board directors even denounced the methods he had himself used to boost sales of the drug. He is John Virapen, and he was director of Lilly in Sweden until 1988. And it's not his style to beat around the bush.
We're not patients, we're consumers. And we're being ripped off right, left, and center. And unfortunately, as I see it today, the drug companies have the power, total power. They are in all corners of the industrial complex. They're in there somewhere doing dirty work.
And you were a part of it.
And I was a part. That's why I'm able to tell you all of this. I was a part of it. I've done, my hands are dirty. I'm trying to clean now. It's redemption time.
It's time for redemption. And John Virapen has written a book with a provocative title, Side Effects, Death. Notably, it discusses the way in which he was asked to conceal side effects.
The doctors prescribe to the patient, but don't tell them anything because they don't know. They rely completely on what the pharma industry tells them. These little salesmen that run around, I was a salesman too, and they used to instruct me when I was a salesman. The first thing is, you don't talk side effects with doctors. Why do they do that? Because they want to make money, 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 money. They don't care about your lives. They only care about their wallets.
From conferences to interviews, John Virapen does not hesitate to reveal what he implemented to encourage sales, corruption, gifts, and trips.
To children. General practitioners, they don't usually get to go to them big Congress and World Congress here and there. So one day I got the idea that maybe we should do something with these guys. So I gathered a whole bunch of them and took them to Singapore. Fly them down to Singapore and gave them works. I mean, it was exclusive. When they came back, my sales escalated.
In light of these accusations, Lilly, the lab that created Prozac, did not wish to meet with us. But this is what they said by email. John Virapen has not been employed by Lilly since 1988. He therefore cannot be considered as a credible source of information concerning the current activities of the group, its motives, or practices. The Lilly Pharmaceutical Company, like all the others, nevertheless fought hard so that the American administration did not impose a black box warning on antidepressant leaflets, an explicit caution against the risks of suicide or violent behavior. But in 2004, finally, it became a done deal. This victory is owed to the activism of victims' families and their lawyers, such as Andy Vickery. The pharmaceutical industry also has a bone to pick with this Texan. He also received billions in compensation during the famous arrangements whereby laboratories preferred to pay out rather than stand trial. To better explain how a pill can kill, he makes use of a puzzle. His demonstration, he claims, applies for all psychotropic drugs.
Is there a phenomenon, a distinct phenomenon, of Prozac-induced suicide? The first attribute is the patients became suddenly suicidal. People who've never thought of killing themselves, of harming themselves, take one of these drugs, whoom, they go instantly from that feeling to death. The second piece of the puzzle was that the suicides were all violent. I've shared with you already the story of Pat Williamson. She was on Prozac 9 days when she came in one morning to her husband and said, "Honey, would you show me how to kill myself?" And her husband said, "Oh, Pat, please." And he decides to go check up on her after 15 or 20 minutes and finds that she has made 100 mutilating cuts in her body. The third piece of the puzzle that Eli Lilly noticed was an obsessive quality to the act. It's just this sudden impulse to do something really violent, really dangerous to themselves or others. And it's just, they're just overwhelmed by it. They're obsessed with the idea, and they cannot control their behavior. In the period of time between the person starts to take the drug and the time of their death or suicide attempt, that there's abnormal behavior. Something different is going on. And sometimes the medical help is, "Oh, you just need to take more of this drug. Let's increase your dose." It's like, "Oh, there's a little fire. Let's pour some gasoline on it." And the final piece of the puzzle is, almost all of the cases that I have handled, the death has happened within 30 days of the time the person either started the drug or had their dose increased.
Once again, Lilly Laboratory only answers our accusations by mail. They explain that one of the most striking studies in the last few years shows that there is a decrease in suicide, -32%, and in mortality, -49%, when depressed patients take antidepressants. But what is the truth? This study is contested by other studies that claim the contrary. And if in the United States, thousands of victims came to the forefront, then why would France be spared, the leading consumer worldwide of psychotropic drugs? In April 2014, a court trial would clarify the current state of affairs in an enlightening manner. Back in December 2008, Jean is depressed. He struggles to deal with his professional life, and at the birth of his son, he attempts suicide. He therefore went to the psychiatrist, Dr. Gossaris. The doctor recommends that he try out a new antidepressant, which was not yet available on the market, Brintellix. Jean did not react to the treatment. The psychiatrist proposed to double the dosage. A few days later, Jean set himself on fire. Corinne, Jean's wife, refused to believe that it was a random suicide. She alerted the authorities, and Dr. Gossaris was put under inspection on 7 charges. He was accused of embezzlement, but worse, putting others' lives in danger for at least 8 patients, including Jean, Corinne's husband. On April 30th, 2014, the doctor was strangely judged in Bordeaux, the court where he himself was a judiciary expert. He received a suspended sentence of 6 months that he appealed. But why would the pharmaceutical company Lundbeck, the creators of the antidepressants, not be investigated themselves? The pharmaceutical company Lundbeck has no interest in this affair going public. They've invested millions in order to get Brintellix approved by medical authorities. However, Jean was not at all the same since his dosage of Brintellix was raised, as described by Corinne and her mother. For Lundbeck, it is therefore not Brintellix that is to blame, but Jean's depression. It's a credible defense, which is used by all pharmaceutical companies when they are blamed. However, we also met with other victims of this trial period, and bizarrely, they all describe the same symptoms. Such as Christian Mounier, who also tested Brintellix for 8 months. Since, he has lost his job, his memory, and he describes himself as a vegetable. A man who is no longer himself, another who commits suicide, apparently devastating side effects for 8 sufferers. But there was also the suicide of 2 more patients just after coming off Brintellix. This bad streak should have alerted the authorities. However, nothing would come of it, as on the same day as Jean's self-immolation, Dr. Gosseres wiped his name from the file. His death was therefore no longer related to the clinical tests. The medical authorities explained to us that for each test of a drug, they only receive the results achieved across the whole territory. The botched trials of Dr. Gosseres were therefore lost in the mass and mixed with several other accepted studies across the world. As this document shows, that makes Brintellix's market release official. Lundbeck throws the blame back to the public health authorities. So what can be said of the package insert that we found in the United States, where Brintellix has been approved since 2013? Side effects are documented in 2 whole pages. Especially, though, the principal paragraph warns against the raised risk of suicidal thoughts and behaviors. It's the famous black box warning. In other words, the highest alert level. In France, Brintellix has just been approved for sale on the market. It has therefore been judged as useful in fighting depression. The doors are slammed shut. Jean is responsible for his own atrocious suicide. Just like the death of Mark, Aurélie's murderous thoughts and suicide attempt, or the fall of Christian Mounier. If the effectiveness of such medication on most serious depressive states cannot be denied, how many more tragedies need to occur before the effects of psychotropic drugs on some patients are truly recognized?
It seems that as long as money and power are involved in the realm of healthcare, pills that are expected to cure depression actually cause suicide and murder. And that's it for this week's program. Until next week and another Aperture, it's goodbye.
Thank you. Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum. Welcome to this episode of Lantern. Now, on the continuation of this program, Lantern, we have a nice story. Let's listen to it. The Farmer and the Stork. This is the title of today's story. Finding that cranes were destroying his newly sown corn, a farmer one evening set a net in his field to catch the destructive birds. When he went to examine the net next morning, he found a number of cranes and also a stork. "Release me, I beseech you," cried the stork, "for I have eaten none of your corn, nor have I done you any harm. I'm a poor innocent stork, as you may see, a most dutiful bird. I honor my father and mother, and I..." But the farmer cut him short. "All this may be true enough, I dare you. But I have cut you with those who are destroying my crops, and you must suffer with the company in which you are found. People are judged by the company they keep. Now, on the continuation of this program, Lantern, we'll listen to the scholar's note on this story. Dr. Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi nasta'in. Association and friendship with unfavorable people, I mean with people whose moral traits are not favorable, usually brings about unfavorable consequences. According to a piece of hadith from the third infallible Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, مجالسه اهل الدناء الشر ومجالسه اهل الفسوق ريبه. Association with evil people is unfavorable, and association with sinners brings about social unreliability. When you make friends with unfavorable people, with people who have, unfavorable moral traits or some moral vices are easily noticeable in the conducts, it brings you all together some vices, some unfavorable consequences. So we find that although some people may not be, may not commit sins, at least, being associated with the sinners or, being associated with, committing sins would certainly bring about unfavorable consequences, and at least it takes a person to a place near the hellfire in the world hereafter. So we must know that whatever we do in this world would also have its own consequences in the world hereafter. Elsewhere in the Holy Quran, it's indicated that those people who are taken to the hellfire, in the world hereafter, they would say, "Ya laytani ittakhadtu ma'a ar-rasuli sabila ya waylata laytani lam attakhidh fulanan khalila laqad adallani 'an dhikr ba'da dhija'ani wa kana shaytanu al-insani khadhula." They would say that I wish I had been associated with the Prophet, and by extension with the infallible Imams, so as to find out the truth and the right path. And I wish I hadn't been associated with those sinners. And those sinners have made me forget the remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the right path. After I have received the indications and the moral instructions. وَكَانَ الشَّيْطَانَ لِلْإِنسَانِ خَذُولًا. And this is the conclusion of the verse. وَكَانَ الشَّيْطَانَ لِلْإِنسَانِ خَذُولًا. Satan has always forsaken people. It means that Satan misleads people, but when people reach the day of resurrection, then they are apt to enter the hellfire. Satan withdraws and says, "Okay, it has been you, who insisted on doing so on, these kinds of sins." In this connection, we find that there are some people with whom, rational people or people of thinking and people of intelligence shouldn't be associated. One of them is, the ignorant people or crazy people.
The Lantern.
Under the Light of Lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Certainly those people who are ignorant, to those people who are crazy, don't deserve to be associates of those people who are people and men of thinking, reflection, and intelligence. Another one is that the hooligans should be strictly avoided. In the early Islamic period, we find that those hooligans created many problems for the early Islamic history. And in consequence, we find that there's a piece of hadith, a short piece of hadith, from the first infallible Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib al-Islam, who said, "Jalisu sharrin niqma." Association with the evil or with evil people is a misfortune. And in this connection, it's indicated that elsewhere in the Holy Quran, it said, قال قائل منهم إني كان لي قرين يقول أئنك إنك لمن المصدقين أئذا متنا وكنا ترابا وعظاما أئنا لمدينون قال هل أنتم مطلعون فطلع فراه في سواء الجحيم قالت الله إن كدت لتردين ولولا نعمة ربي لكنت من المحترين. On the judgment day, those people who experience, that unfavorable, the consequences of those unfavorable deeds in this world, they would say that, okay, what an unfavorable, what a sinful associate we had. And when he finds out that, when the sinner in this world experiences in the world hereafter that, he or she is, very much close to be put into the hellfire, he would say that, okay, he or she feels very sorry for his misdeeds in this world. And would say, وَلَوْلَا نِعْمَةَ رَبِّي لَكُنْتُ مِنَ الْمُحْدَرِينَ. And he or she would say that had it not had been because of the divine favor upon me, I would have certainly been one of those people who entered the hellfire. Thank you.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillah tatma'innul
qulub. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.